They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that's never been to Stonehenge. However, I guess we could say we certainly have been... Well, never mind. This is Hysteria 51.
Come be a Uncle John's band, playing to the tide.
Exactly, C-Bot. Also, thanks for using that clip. A little bit of a nod to me.
Don't get emotional. Was just the only clip I had available.
That figures. We are broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago. My name is John Goforth, and sitting alongside virtually, please welcome my co-host, the smooth as pudding tones of Mr. Brent Hand.
Thanks, John. I got to say, I'm sort of proud of, well, my pudding tones, number one. I just, I hope when you think of me, you think of pudding tones.
Pudding tones, yeah. That's what we're going to put on your tombstone.
I'd rather people think about me than Cosby when they think of pudding, so I'm okay with that. I am sort of proud of C-Bot playing a little Grateful Dead there, though, so kudos there.
Yeah, me too. I was a bit surprised as well. I mean,
barf, I take it back.
There it is. Now things are right in the world again. Anyway, Brent, let's not delay getting into the topic too much tonight. It's a really, really good one, but since he brought it up, I have a question. We talk about new pop culture fairly often, and if we talk about old pop culture, it's generally the 80s or 90s. What is your favorite band from that era, the 60s, 70s, you know, the Grateful Dead's era?
Oh, man, I got to tell you, there's only one band. I shouldn't say this. I know everyone's going to have their own opinion, but when you look at bands and you have to pick one from that time period that really encompasses everything great about music, I got to go with the Monkees.
Davy Jones, he just had something going on.
I'll take a side. I mean, I'll give you a cliched answer, which is Led Zeppelin, because they were incredible. You know, you can't go wrong when you think 60s and 70s.
Well, all the answers are going to be cliched to one extent or another, because you have to be that good of a band to still have people, you know, I don't know, 50, 60 years later talking
right,
about you.
Right, exactly so. And another band that was in that time period that I'm a huge fan of is Heart. And if you saw Heart's cover of Stairway to Heaven, they did at the, I think it was the Kennedy Center Honors a few years ago. Holy crap. I think Heart doesn't get the recognition that they should get. Anna and Nancy Heart, they're just fantastic musicians. So that's who I'm going with. What's your pick?
Heart, fair enough. I was never much into them. I'm not a sexist, but I do have to admit that I...
Well, your grandfather was killed by a barracuda, so there is that.
That's my problem, man. I do have to admit that I tend to lean towards bands that have male frontmen versus female lead singers. I don't tend to like them as much. It's not that I have a problem with there being a female lead singer. It's just that of the totality of the music that I've heard led by bands with female lead singers, it's just I tend to like less of it. Janis Joplin being a strong exception to that. And, you know, there's a few others.
I'm not a Janis Joplin fan. My wife loves her. I don't like her voice for some reason.
I understand. I think this is a fair, this time period is also fairly easy to find bands that other people love and you hate. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before, but speaking of bands that have female lead singers or female singers, Fleetwood Mac, man, Stevie Nicks does not do it for me. I hate Fleetwood Mac. Almost as much as I hate the Eagles, but I won't beat that dead horse.
So when her and Don Henley were making music together, you were just fucking gagging yourself to death, right?
Oh, I mean,
in a closet with
that just sounds like in John's little
hanging
version of hell. In John's little version of hell, it's just those two playing music to me all day and night,
just singing Leather and Lace over and over and over on repeat, right outside of Hotel California. That's beautiful.
Yeah,
right,
exactly. So, all right, so picking favorites is tough, and you know, you can always make the argument, well, do you want a jam band like the Grateful Dead, or do you want to, you know, what at the time was considered hard rock or even closer to heavy metal in Led Zeppelin? You know, and those are, how could you pick between Grateful Dead and Led Zeppelin when they're so different? But that said, I think my two favorite, or the two that I listen to most often from that era, I do have to pick two, would be the Beatles, which is, you know, I get it. That's the chalk answer, but it's the chalk answer for a reason. They're that good.
The Beatles is to Kevin what Eagles are to you. Kevin Crispin, you know, he just hates the Beatles.
He hates them. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. he, you know what? He's done enough podcasts. He should start a Beatles podcast.
No doubt, right?
Anyway, my other is definitely Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Not only do I love Pink Floyd, and I have loved Pink Floyd since my dad turned me on to them. In the early 90s, he gave me his copy of Pulse.
That, with the battery blinking light, yes, in the corner, I remember.
You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So if you haven't been listening to the show long, Brent and I have known each other for most of our lives. And
40 minutes, yeah.
And Brent would come over to my house, and this is probably when we were, 12 years old or something, and my dad had given me this copy of Pulse, and it had a little a little watch battery in it, and that had a little, you know, just blinking
LED or whatever.
LED, yeah.
Probably wasn't exactly. Even LED then. I don't even know what the hell they would have, you know.
Diode. <Yeah. laughs> Anyway, and so going back to then, I've always loved Pink Floyd. And then kind of a sentimental thing, I had just moved to Chicago, and I didn't have much money, but I decided to, really splurge because my dad had a tough run of it. Some various things had happened, and I bought... he and I tickets to see Roger Waters do The Wall at Wrigley Field. And I splurged and I went for floor seats, which were actually on the field. I think they were $500 a piece. I mean, $1,000 to someone who just moved to Chicago and isn't really sure where their next paycheck's coming from is a lot of money. But I for some reason I did it. And we went and we had the best time. It was one of the best nights of my life. We both loved the music. A very smoking paraphernalia was being handed around freely on the field at Wrigley. Had some good beers. It was just a magical night. And he said the same thing. And within the next year or so, my dad passed away unexpectedly. So it was kind of cool to have that that really memorable moment. And so, if I wasn't already a complete fan of Pink Floyd, it certainly got etched in stone there.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome anytime you can have a memory attached to a concert or something like that, or you know, for one reason or another.
Music is uniquely suited to do that as well. You know, you don't necessarily have those same vivid memories and guttural reactions to we were watching Titanic and then this happened.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot less music and more chanting, I think, is what yes, ties us in this week's
druidic
topic.
Chanting.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, John, it is prehistoric Lego week on H51. That's the easiest way to break this down, right?
Yeah, and also surprising topic week. And what I mean by that is when you first suggested Stonehenge, I was like, well, we've done that, right?
Right. This seems like it would have been number four.
Episode six, yeah.
And we've had, of course, people have asked for it, and it just seems kind of, I don't know, for me it was almost kind of too on the nose. Does that make sense? And then
sense. Yeah. We literally did an episode on Area 51. That was on the nose.
Yeah, but that was our 51st episode. It just made fucking sense.
That's true.
That was on brand.
This should have been our 4,500th episode.
We've done 63 on Bob Lazar alone, so.
And anyone who listened to it actually thinks that we did 7 on the flat earth, but it was only 2.
Yeah, well, it felt like that.
Or actually, technically it was three.
Yeah,
there was
true.
The lost episode with me and Joe Peck.
Did you finally, speaking of, I don't remember if we said it on the last episode or if I mentioned it to you, I sent you the Djibouti dubs, yo, the earth is flat, yo.
Oh, yeah. The Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, get out of here, round earther. But anyway, like I did say, it is prehistoric Lego week this week. And those Legos happen to be in a far off place called the British Isles. That's in the far off land of British is the proper term, I believe, is what they're like
where
themselves.
We have mentioned it before and we'll mention it again because they keep coming. We have an insane amount of listeners.
I know. We were just actually having a conversation with advertisers and they were asking about our breakdown. We're like, we actually have a lot of Europe and we can see where you're from, you know, as far as the, you know, as at least where you're listening
we're
in the
world. Watching you.
And what you're wearing and how you smell. And yeah, we can see that. And they're like, wow, you guys really do. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, this does come to us from the British Isles from long, long ago.
Yes. Like 3000 BC in Wiltshire, England.
Wiltshire.
I never know if there's a T's or Wiltshire. Yeah. Like,
oh, no. You're
going to find
out
that it's
pronounced. But 50-50, I'm right.
Yeah, Wiltshire. Wiltshire, England. Wiltshire. We're from the Shire. Yeah, no. Wiltshire,
Shire.
England. And some rocks were thrown about. But not just any rocks. These are important because they're big-ass rocks. That's why we care. Spoiler alert. And also on top of that, not only are they big-ass rocks, they're rocks that didn't exactly belong. And that is why it's so interesting. We're going to get into that. But the short in this week breakdown is these rocks make up a ring of standing stones. It's about 100 rocks in all.
And if you haven't seen a picture of Stonehenge,
the fuck is wrong with you?
To continue the metaphor, what rock have you been living under? But take a moment and go look. It's the most well-known set of rocks in the world, probably.
It's the thing that well-known lower fourth denizen Clark Griswold rammed into when they were on vacation over there. Yeah, and that's
indeed
why you can no longer walk up to them or get close to them or touch them anymore. Maybe.
Also, if you have experience, if you're in Hysteria Nation, you've certainly seen this. And if you're not, what are you waiting for? But there are wonderful memes that travel around this world that allude to the Easter Island guys. It's actually their toes sticking out of them.
And in Britain, it's pronounced meme, just so you know. In Wiltshire, they say meme. I'm pretty sure. Meme. Just start saying that. You'll sound smarter.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll do my best.
So like we were saying, like 100 rocks and all massive, upright, or should be. A lot of them are laying down, but they should be upright and in a circle layout. And on average, each stone, now this is average, is about 13 feet or 4.0 meters if you eat beans with your breakfast. I did some research there.
You have to do the
there.
Conversion when it's in their land.
Yeah. And they're also about 7 feet wide or 2.1 meters and weigh in an average of 25 tons or tones or whatever the hell they got. I don't know.
Now, those are the measurements on the larger rocks, right?
Well, no. So there are bigger. That's the average of all of them put together.
That's the average.
So
okay,
there are larger. They're actually much larger than just that. I'll break that down here in a little bit. But that is your average if you're taking them all into consideration. So, yeah.
And, you know, let's spend just 1 second on the meta conversation around this topic. So Stonehenge, it's a bunch of big rocks that are really old, and there's been debate throughout the years as to how old they are and who put them there. When we were growing up and reading things like the Time Life Mysteries of the Universe and watching things
like
Unsolved Mysteries,
could it be?
We were all told back then that druids made these.
Yeah, fuck that noise. We've learned since then.
Which we've learned since. That's not the case.
We'll get into that too. But yeah.
You know, the question is who put them there and what are they for? And we'll get to all of that.
Spoiler alert, John. Everywhere crisscrossing this planet are large stones. And the question is who put them there and what are they for?
That's true.
That's the tie that binds on this planet.
Although, well, the Georgia Guidestones, we know what they're for. I suppose
it's Ted Turner. He put him there. I saw him.
Yeah, he put him there. Yeah,
I saw him.
But and you know where this ties in. This ties into ancient rites of sacrifice, or people think they thought it did, or think it does. Some people think it ties into aliens, and the conceit there being that there's no way that human beings could have moved these rocks 4,500 years ago.
You're right. No human being would stack books like this.
Anyway, we'll get to all of that, but the point is
I just wanted a cool layout for my dining room.
And ritual sacrifice, right? Right, Seabot?
What else are you going to eat?
Fair enough.
Lucy's on brand.
We'll get to all of that, but the point is that these rocks have been in the cultural zeitgeist, a term we use too often, gosh, since I've been alive, I think.
Yeah, the whole time, even like you said, when we were kids, you know, we grew up in that age of the Time Life, Mysteries of the Unknown, and Robert Stack preaching ancient stuff. They've always had that feel to them, like you don't really know, but something about them was special, right? At least they always seem that way to me, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Even more than the pyramids, to me, this seemed more trippy and I don't know. I don't know why.
Well, you know, people say when they visit them or when they get close to them that, like, the hairs on their arms stand up on
people end. Say the same thing when they get close to Seabot, so that's not really doing a lot for me. Or a television that's been left on too long. Remember tube TVs? My hair's standing up on its end. Don't be damned. It must be spiritual.
Why do you think I had a kid or a remote?
Calm now. Anyway, so yeah, a few thousand years ago, some British peeps wanted to stack some stones. Why do we care? Like you're saying, because in scientific terms, and I don't want to use big words, but I'm going to, it's bonkers and makes no sense as far as.
Oh, yeah, that was a good assessment.
Yeah.
Very scientific.
And as John, dear listener, has just been saying, the scholars argue to this day over what its purpose was. But most modern scholars now agree that Stonehenge was at least once a burial ground. Now, I'm going to say at least because you're going to find out, much like a shopping mall, there's a lot of turnover in this place. Mm-hmm. And they still go back and forth on some key points, though, such as like what its purpose it really was or it served to the people at the time. How civilization without modern technology or even, and get this, this is the one that really drives it home to me. It was built at a time when they didn't have the wheel, they say, could produce something like this. It's hard for me to fathom, though, how someone wouldn't go, a wheel would make this easier, even when there was no wheel. Like, as a kid, you try to make things easier. But I guess, I don't know, you're subjected to wheels at an early age? I don't know.
You know, I watched a few different documentaries for this one. And one I watched was from Naked Science, I believe.
Ooh.
And
I can't get past the dicks.
And they
hate to sound like a broken record.
They talked about how it was pre-wheel, and they also showed how it could have been done pre-wheel. And this is like what scientists agree is probably how the stones were transported. And it basically boils down to round logs and a lot of grease.
Yeah, they always show on some of those things. They'll have a guy like with like a 20-ton stone and he's moving around with one hand because he's got like a can lever and some logs and stuff. It's crazy.
But the point is, like, I guess we can, this is a semantic debate, but is that really pre-wheel? I mean, those are wheels of sorts, aren't they?
Well, they're would you call them skids?
They're round.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. I guess I always think of before the wheel as everything having right angles.
Right. Well, I mean, the things you're talking about, this brings up the construction questions like crazy when you're thinking about the whole thing. Case in point, the sandstone slabs of its outer ring come from a local quarry. That's not a big deal. Like you're saying, you get some of those slabs, you move them around, you get in there. But scientists have traced the blue stones that make up the inner ring all the way to Preseli Hills in Wales, or Preseli. I'm probably butchering these names. It's okay. You come to Illinois, you're not going to name anything right. Guess what? Berlin is not named Berlin, but it's spelled the same here. Now, there are also ways that they could have maybe gotten there on their own, even though they're from somewhere else. We're going to cross a lot of these.
Tractor beams from UFOs.
Right.
Duh.
But this place is about 200 miles from where Stonehenge sits on the Salisbury Plain. And remember, now, no wheels, that's a long way to be using those logs to push some things, but when your wife really wants one type of decoration, you kind of go out of your way, especially when you can make people do it for you. So
we'll get to the whole Wales connection, but it's worth noting that if it came from Wales, they would have also needed to travel over water.
Whales have to be in water or they'll die. They dry out. This is the way
Thank
it goes.
You. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's why I'm here. I add color and depth. I'm a fucking tracer. Anyway, before we get too far into construction and the factor, that's the way I like to call it.
The
John,
woo-woo.
We were kind of saying this, but when you think of Stonehenge, what is the thing that comes to mind most? What do you think of?
I honestly think it's UFOs. I think.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was like there must have just been a
moment.
We were
kind of predisposed to or pre-programmed to think of that kind of, right?
Yeah. There must have been a moment when we were in our, I don't know, early teens-ish, early 90s, where like Stonehenge was on a number of shows and you know, people acted like fictional shows. And, you know, UFOs, I don't know. I can't pinpoint where it came from. But because of the generation I come from, I don't think I'm alone in this. Like Stonehenge, somehow it was an association was made to UFOs, maybe because they align with certain stars and all of that. But that's what I think of.
Maybe it's just because UFO is the easy go-to when we don't really understand things also, especially at a time when you need ratings. What were we going to say? It was Mitch. I don't know. UFOs. There you go, Mitch. That's why we keep you on the budget.
Well, and also the classic Ancient Aliens argument, which is, we think any other culture wasn't as smart or as good as us, and so they couldn't have figured this out, so it must have been aliens.
Oh, right. The tongue-in-cheek racist Eric Von Daniken's of the world. Like,
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
I'm not saying,
exactly.
I'm just saying.
Right.
Yeah. break time. But when we come back, we're going to break down. We're going to actually tell you exactly not only where they come from, the name of the aliens that put them there. That's coming up next on Hysteria 51.
Earl and Howard.
What'd you say?
Earl and Howard.
That's right. Very interstellar names. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
would you have preferred Gleep Glop and Garmax?
I always prefer Gleep Glop. Garmax is on my bad side since the incident, so he can go to hell.
Nation, we're back and we're talking big rocks, we're talking Stonehenge, and we're talking construction.
Yeah, okay, so first off, these druids had this giant inflatable rat because this was not a union job. I want you to know that right now. And they used scabs, is what they called their early builders to build. No. Everyone, I hope, knows what I'm talking about when I say that.
They had magic wands, Brent, and they were able to cast spells that were easily allowed them to pick up the stones and move them.
It's pronounced
to
Merlin, and he did it all, as we're going to find out, of course.
Oh, okay. You know, in all truth, we already said we think druids did not build this because it is much older than when the druids were there in Britain.
Well, let's talk this. So we said construction. It's multi-phase construction because this bastard, it took some time. When I say it took some time, Home Depot wasn't quite in the game yet when Oliver and Sebastian decided to build this thing.
Who the hell was Oliver and Sebastian?
No one in particular. I just threw out some British-sounding names.
What would your go-to American names be?
I don't know. Kyle and Chuck?
That plays.
Moving on. That was incredibly stupid. Archaeologists think that...
Hey, hey, hey. Cheese muffins. Cheese muffins. Cheese muffins. Cheese muffins.
Archaeologists think...
You woke him up. You shouldn't have done that.
You're right.
Should not have done that.
They think this thing was built in several stages, with the earliest constructed about 5,000 or more years ago. So you got these Neolithic people using primitive tools, and get this, probably or possibly or whatever you want to say, they were made from deer antlers to dig this massive circular ditch or bank or hinge, as they call it, on the Salisbury Plain. And this is kind of where the name Hinge comes from, is this, that's what they named it. And that's where this,
right,
this thing comes from. Dictionary tells us the prehistoric monument consists of circle of stones or wood uprights. Boom, you got a hinge.
Yep. Yep. A couple notes on that. You mentioned that they think, it was done, that the tools might have been some of the tools might have been like deer antlers. Mm-hmm. That's because they actually found a deer antler under one of the rocks. So that obviously came from that time period. Also worth noting that the time period in question, you said, is multi-phased, because we're talking about starting, like you said, like 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
But then some of the additions and some of the changes happening 1,000 years later, 1,500 years later. There's a little bit of an element of the Egyptian pyramids here, where there some historians wonder if the pyramids weren't partially built by even earlier civilizations and then added on to by the Egyptians.
Right.
This might have been something similar, where it was more than one civilization kind of working on them.
It's like when you're working at Auntie Anne's and it's been 7.5 years and you finally decide to clean the place and you move the fryolator out and there's a great steak and potato cup back there, still with a potato in it. It's from a previous generation. They were there, they started building it, and you just added on to it. You see, I brought it back to that mall.
That mall thing there.
Did you get it?
You did it well. You did it well.
Great steak and potato. Remember that?
Oh, I do. They had the fries that you ate with the malt vinegar.
Ugh. I'm like, I don't know why I don't like malt vinegar. And everyone, I remember I was on a date one time. I told this to Lisa not too long ago. I was on a date one time. I bought fries and she dumped malt vinegar all over them. I'm like, well, I think this date's done.
I believe that. It's like a deal breaker.
Yeah, that was skinny Brent. Now if you did it, I'd have beheaded that bitch.
So Brent, what happened with Lucy last night? Oh, well, she was beautiful. She was smart. She was talented. She paid for dinner, and I'm done with her. Why? Well, she poured malt vinegar on the fries.
What kind of heathen is brought up to not ask first? I ask you, sir. That is not who I want bearing my children. I was brought up better than that.
Were you raised in a barn?
Speaking of deep pits, so these deep pits dating back to the era and are located within the circle, they're known as the Aubrey Holes, which we went to high school with her, after a dude named John Aubrey. And he was a 17th century antiquarian you know, he did some stuff with old stuff, who discovered them. And he and others, they believe that they once held a ring of actual timber posts in the middle.
I remember when the druids used to bang on those posts while worshiping me.
Right. Anyway.
It is fun to look at pictures of the reimagining of what Stonehenge looked like when it was built, you know, because obviously a 4,000-year-old log wouldn't still be there. 4,000-year-old rock is. So a lot of the rocks are missing and toppled right. over, like you said. It's cool to look at like the drawings of what it like
once
looked
it
like.
Looked like this. Yeah, and it's just a radio yeah. shack. You're like, shit, man. They have been around
they really
forever.
Had their shit together.
So during the third phase of construction, which took place about 2000 BC, Sarsen sandstone slabs, that is a mouthful, were arranged into an outer crescent or ring. Some were assembled into the three-piece structures called trilithons that stand kind of tall in the center of Stonehenge. And then there's 50 Sarsen stones are now still visible on the site, but researchers believe there were a lot more at one time. And scientists, mm-hmm. speaking of, they radiocarbon dated them, and they suggest that the work continued to Stonehenge until roughly 1600 BC, with the blue stones that we talked about, those big ones in particular, being repositioned multiple times. Feng shui, baby. You know what I mean?
It's true. Feng shui is probably why that happened. But that is one of the most intriguing parts of this, after having done the research, this story to me, is specifically the blue stones got moved around a lot.
Little left. Stop. You know what? We'll revisit this in a couple years.
back to the right.
Yeah.
But seriously, like, so it begs the question, what were they for? You know, that they needed to move, but the other stones didn't necessarily need mm-hmm. to move. Did, you know, I mean, it's probably the same civilization. I'm not a historian, but it's definitely.
What if
mean,
we got hit by some giant asteroid and it shifted the Earth's axis and they had to reposition it because it no longer aligned with the solstices? Holy shit, I just cracked the code. Didn't really happen. And there'd be proof all over the planet, but that just makes a lot of sense when I say it with
just
confidence.
It tracks. But it really is interesting. Like I know I keep getting stuck on the civilization thing. 1,000 years later is a long time.
Yeah.
What were things like here 1,000 years ago? You know, I mean, we tend to group these things in ancient history, like as entire eras, and like, oh yeah, it was back then. Yeah. Like,
well, that's because I live in a house that's super old, John. Over 100 years old. You know, that's our idea of ancient. Meanwhile, right. our fucking friends listening to this over the seas are driving around a castle right now bitching about it. Oh, God, fucking castles, you know, and shit. And they're like, oh, man, your house is over 100 years old. Shit. Wow, that's crazy. How do you guys even survive?
That's funny. This bar has been here since the 1600s.
Yeah. Right. There are some of those, like the oldest
I know.
Bar
I want to go.
Remember, we were talking about sizes, though. Okay, and I said, you know, they weighed like 25 tons. Well, that's on average. The heaviest one, 40 tons and 24 feet high. So 25 tons, that's, you know, the average. It's a lot littler than the largest one. And you talked about this. A lot of people think they were brought there with the help of sledges and ropes. Sledges being, you know, they lay the timbers down, they move them. Some think they may have been scattered. Well, let me start this over. They came from a long way away because they can look at the stone and know where it came from. They think they might have been, you know, scattered in the immediate vicinity when the monument's Neolithic architects first broke ground there. Kind of like, shit, there's big rocks here. We better make a hinge. What the hell's a hinge? I don't know. We can figure it out as we go. Now, why would those blue stones, though, be there? Because some of the smaller blue stones we mentioned, they came all the way from that other place in Wales, some 200 miles away from Stonehenge. So the big question everyone says is how? How would these prehistoric builders haul these boulders that these ones weighed up to 4 tons over such a great distance? This is kind of cool.
And one of the original thoughts was that even though this blue stone originated in Wales, they know that at the end of the last ice age, big glaciers moved through and moved shit around.
Right.
And so one of the theories was that a glacier had basically drug those rocks into that valley or that field where the henge is. And, you know, the people that happened along are like, hey, we can just use these.
Right. They were there. They were literally there.
That has since been somewhat proven false. The common scientific, I suppose nothing can be debunked or has been debunked, but the common scientific belief nowadays is that the glaciers did not, in fact, bring the blue stones there, that somebody else did.
Right. Their ice flows all over this planet have moved rocks all over the planet, like we said. And they call them glacial erratics. And it's, like you said, it's a possibility, but there's a lot of other stuff. We said the sludge and rollers, you know, tree trunks moving around, put them on rafts and float them up the Welsh coast and then up the River Avon towards the plain. Or, you know, they had this fleet of vessels, or even some people had them transporting them in giant wicker baskets, or a combination of ball bearings, and I mean, or oxen, or ghosts, or fucking aliens. I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah, coming from Wales, that's what you were talking about with the boats. So it has to cross across the water, and if you take into account who the early Britons were and the technology they had available to them, the most likely way they would have done it across water, specifically, were like these big canoes that were essentially just hollowed out tree trunks. That's all they were. And that's what the most predominant boat of the time was. And so on that same documentary I was telling you about, Naked Science, after they put their dingle away and got into a dinghy, they were literally strapped two of these boats together, again, hollowed out tree trunks, strap them together, put a couple boards across the two, and then throw that 4-ton bad boy on top and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they actually proved out that it's possible.
There's no replacement for displacement. You can move a lot of shit with it, you know?
Yep, that's right.
There's lots of thoughts, but it all comes down to one truth. We don't know. Lots of educated guesses, but we don't know. Like you said, there's a pretty good guess that it didn't get thrown there by glaciers, even though that's a fantastic way that it could have happened. There's just no proof of it. It would show in the topography around, and it doesn't.
Right.
Speaking of not knowing, though, experts are almost certain that the builders strategically placed the rocks to showcase the solstice twice a year, talking about, you know, one of the reasons it's there. But with no writing of the era, even that's left to the imagination. But it's awesome to see. If you ever want to look up a picture, look up of what the solstice looks like there when it hits it. It is
through Stonehenge,
beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we got Heather Sabir. She's an English Heritage Senior Curator at Stonehenge. She told Time Magazine, I got this quote from there, "We know that the stone circles do represent the line of the midsummer sunrise and the winter sunset, but I don't think that was the only reason it was built." Yeah, I don't think it was just like to come have a party twice a year, but I've partied for weirder reasons.
It's true. So, I've seen it.
That said, the summer solstice lines up perfectly, like we said, and it's beautiful. Look it up. So who built it? Why? And why is it important? That's a big one. I think we're going to cover that and we're going to answer it.
It seems like a really big endeavor to just, you know, look at the solstices twice a year.
We're going to give you all those answers, and you're going to leave not wanting baby birds. That's coming up next after the break on Hysteria 51.
Overpromise and underdeliver. That's the way we like it.
That's my bread and butter. John, who built it? Lay it on me. Tell me. Tell me. Tell me. Tell me.
Aliens.
Tell me.
Aliens.
Tell me.
Aliens.
Tell me.
Aliens. Aliens.
You told me.
I'm done.
All right, we'll break it down a little
play
further.
Let's play the exit music. We're done.
Yeah, here we go. Pretend it wasn't. Break it down a little further, just in case. Well, let's pretend. Thought experiment.
All right. All right. All right. Thought experiment. Let's turn to our, let's actually go to the history books here and see what that tells us.
Merlin.
Well,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
It does, actually. Yeah, they do tell us that Merlin built it, or at least one story does. you know, built it is contested at best.
Yeah, there have been some things that have, again, been debunked because of more modern radiocarbon dating, mm-hmm. Like the Druids not doing it, but there are a few groups that most people point towards. Mm-hmm. They all seem to believe it was a place of great importance for over a millennia.
That's crazy, like you're talking about. For 1,000 years, people were gathering and doing shit there. That's a long time.
Right.
That's a, you know.
But the question is, what drew the early Britons to this plain, to Salisbury Plain, and inspired them to continue, I suppose, developing it? That's the question that is still up for hot debate.
Right, right, right.
I have a hot take on a 5,000-year-old monolithic structure. All right.
Yeah, well, 12th-century writer Geoffrey of Monmouth, whose tale of King Arthur and the mythical account of English history were considered factual well into the Middle Ages. Did you know that like King Arthur and all that was just considered canon? And stonework is the handiwork of the men.
Wait, are you saying that it's not?
Well, they say that it was made by Merlin. He really did say that. And he said in the mid-5th century, hundreds of British nobles were slaughtered by the Saxons and buried on Salisbury Plain. And hoping to erect a memorial to the fallen subjects, King Ambrosius sent an army to Ireland to retrieve a stone circle known as the Giant's Ring, which ancient giants had built from magical African blue stones. We all learned this in elementary school, so it's good on them. We know this is true so far. You remember the magical African blue stones, and
sure,
if you
sure.
wished on them, you got a big penis. The soldiers successfully defeated the Irish, but failed to move the stones, so Merlin, having to do everything, used his sorcery to spirit them across the sea and arrange them on this giant mass grave. Boom, Stonehenge, that's how it was made. I'm making fun of it, but that's what people thought for a very long time.
Boats? Where we're going, we don't need boats.
Oh, and legend has it that Ambrosius and his brother Uther, King Arthur's father, were buried there as well. John, people believed that for a long time. They really did. Now we know that Merlin was evil, and he fought dragons to the bitter end. Because we're educated.
And so he wouldn't have done something nice like this. Yeah. Also, Brent, the monument's construction actually predates Merlin, or at least the time period Merlin was supposed to have lived, mm-hmm. or the people that inspired the tale of Merlin actually lived. It's older than all of that by like thousands of years.
Maybe he is eternal like me.
Maybe you're an asshole. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, but maybe. We can pretend.
Other folks have blamed the Saxons, the Danes, the Romans, the Greeks, the Egyptians.
Pretty much the Atlanteans, everyone that was around. It was a Stargate, you know. what I heard a lot comes from the 17th century archaeologist we mentioned before, John Aubrey.
Aubrey Holes.
Mm-hmm. He made the claim that Stonehenge was a work of Celtic high priests known as, wait for it, Druids. That's where that comes from.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that Aubrey was the originator of that.
People who identify as modern Druids, they gather at Stonehenge for the summer solstice.
That's got to be some Eyes Wide
Awkward
Shut shit.
Where's my mask and my slave girl? Yeah, that was that's a weird movie. Spoiler alert, though, in the mid-20th century, radiocarbon dating, that bastard known as knowledge, it demonstrated that Stonehenge stood more than 1,000 years before the Celtics inhabited the region. So that kind of threw the Druids out of the running. So that's the stuff we've heard. That's the stuff that people believed. Let's get to a little bit of modern takes. What do modern people say, John? We're modern.
So we were talking a little bit about this before, but most historians and archaeologists now agree that several distinct tribes of people contributed to Stonehenge, each taking on a different phase of its construction. But they were all, we'll get into the specifics, but they were all just early Britons, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and they actually named a lot of the tribes. Well, back then they were called tribes or gangs, but there were the rogues, the warriors, the orphans, the baseball furies, the Lizzies, the punks, the boppers. And whenever they were wanting another tribe to come out, they'd be like, warriors, come out to play, yay. And then they do sacrifices and things like that. They did a whole movie about it in the 70s. It was a docudrama.
Now, the thing is, me and all the listeners knew where you were going with it. Like nobody was fooled. This wasn't one of those.
I'm not following.
Oh, he pulled the rug out from under me. We knew. Uh-huh. We were just hoping you would avoid the four car collision, and you didn't.
I don't know what you're talking about. I blacked out.
All right. So, Warriors aside,
you were more of a baseball fury, weren't you? Keep going. Sorry.
So, Warriors aside, the point is it was built in phases by different groups or tribes, but all early Britons. They found bones, they found tools, they found other artifacts on the site that support the hypothesis. The first stage was achieved by Neolithic agrarians who were likely indigenous to the British Isles. As I said, early Britons. Later, it is believed that groups with more advanced tools and a bit more of a communal way of life, put their stamp on the site. Yeah. Some have suggested that the folks doing this were immigrants from the European continent, but many scientists think that they were actually native. Most scientists believe that they were actually native Britons descended from the original builders.
Yeah, well, pretty much what we're saying is no one really agrees for sure.
Here's kind of the headline.
Your takeaway from all of that is John used to be a roadie for Neolithic agrarians, so that's your big takeaway. Tell you aspired.
No. I wrote their first song. I was a roadie for Lemon Scented Weekend. Get it right. All right. So I think the headline, it's at least 4,500, if not 5,000 years old. And the folks that built it were likely the early Britons, the first Britons of the modern era, out of the Ice Age and into the Bronze Age.
That's who built it. All know, we're crash landed aliens. Period. Full
yes,
stop.
Yes. Thank you.
They were Fair the enough. Descendants of the Atlantean race. They were put here to mine this planet. Tell the monkey people.
Until Planet
us,
X comes back around.
Rose up and took it back from them. You know, damn Homo sapiens. And so they made a big old block. You know, and that's the way it goes. Why should we care? Well, that's important, John. Forget about the aliens because they've forgotten about us. Why should we care?
Well, it's a massive undertaking. I mean, even if somebody wanted to do this today, it's not something that could be done overnight. And yet it happened in a time when, now, admittedly, we don't know a ton about the time, yeah. But we know that tools were scarce and handmade, and the wheel is believed to not even have existed.
It's interesting you say that. It's funny because I watch a lot of these shows where they'll look at it and they'll go, we don't even have the technology to do it now. And finally, I forget what it was. They had a guy on there. He goes, we don't. We have the machinery that we could build to do it. We just don't have it. That's why it's such an undertaking is you have to go out. Every new job, you want to build a car, you got to go make the machinery that's going to build this new line of cars. That's why it's such an undertaking. Just because we don't have the machine to lift a 40-ton block and ram it into the ground right now doesn't mean we couldn't. We just don't. And people grab onto that and go, it's impossible.
That's why I love engineers so much. You know, somebody will say it's impossible. Like, fuck, it is. Yeah. And then you see a bunch of guys in wide brim hats and khakis standing around in a field for 3 days. And all of a sudden, they've got Stonehenge constructed.
Right. And the engineers are the one that come with it. And then the motherfuckers that got to move it every 3.5 months when someone gets antsy, gets mad at the engineers because they didn't put any, you know, they put the shit to move it on the top instead of the bottom. And then they got to fucking fix it. Yeah.
Order of operations was never a strong suit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned this, like you said, there's a lot of archaeological evidence that Stonehenge was used as a burial site. So it should be preserved and protected and remembered because no matter what it was there. And that was at least part of its long history. But most scholars believed it served a lot of other functions as well. Like you said, it's there for 1,000 years. It was, you know, Seebot's multi-purpose room, or whatever the fuck he was making up earlier when he said that.
His war room.
Either that, or there's a ceremonial site, a religious pilgrimage destination, even today, like we said with the Druids, final resting place for royalty, or a memorial erected to honor, perhaps spiritually connect with the ancestors, and they did that in the solstices. It's a choose-your-own-adventure. Alien landing pad / sacrificial altar to the dark ancient ones. That's a given, but it had so many other purposes as well.
Well, and not only that, but when you say what was its purpose, you're asking multiple groups. Like the originators, the folks that started it might have had one purpose. Maybe they just wanted
the subjugation of mankind for fuel and food.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant. Maybe they just wanted to honor their gods at the time.
Yeah.
And they aligned it to the solstice. Okay, great. And then the next group's like, hey, these are some pretty cool rocks. Let's add to it and bury a bunch of our kings here. Mm-hmm. You know, like it didn't need to be the same flavor for every group. When you're talking about things that are epic in scale, right? Like, so Stonehenge, the Egyptian pyramids. When you're talking about things that are epic in scale, they can mean different things to different folks who come along and utilize them.
Right. Yes, you're exactly right. And that's what's great about it. And it's also important to remember, and we're talking about why it's important. It's fucking famous. It's one of the most recognizable sites in the world. I mean, that in and of itself, it's one of the wonders of the world. It draws more than 800,000 tourists a year, not counting 2020, I'm sure. Though, who knows? Who knows? But, yeah, that's...
The number might not have changed much in 2020.
Yeah, sadly enough, right? Yeah, it draws a lot of people there. It's important for their economy, and it's important for us to be able to look at things and still have that kind of childish wonder, because we had that. That's what we were talking about. This wonder gives you, and you go, I don't know, and I'd like to think it was this or that. And I even think that a lot of the reason that the Druid thing kind of caught on is because they're so... You guys in robes chanting and stuff, and not in a weird bathhouse sense, like out in the field, you know? So it's not real weird. That's why it works. That's why it worked for us.
And I also think that whenever you have something this ancient, as a society that has built so many things that fall apart very quickly, whenever you have something this ancient, you try to protect it and you try to understand it and learn from it, you know? And we don't have a ton of stuff this old that we can learn from, but the confluence of that with modern day technology is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about the progress that has been made just since we were kids on understanding Stonehenge, and as technology progresses, what we'll even understand 50 years mm-hmm. from now about it. That's the exciting part about the times we live in, Brent.
The times, they are a changing. Yeah. Speaking about understanding and protecting the ancient things, Seabot, you got any final thoughts on Stonehenge?
It's overrated and frankly a bore. That's why I abandoned it a couple years after I made it.
That makes sense. That's actually right on brand with him.
You know what we should do? We should get Seabot outside and we should just tip doesn't even have to be a 4-ton boulder. We should tip like a 1-ton boulder his way. And, you know, if he's such a badass, he'll just catch it and, you know, go put it where it needs to be.
Sure thing. And while I'm putting things where they need to be, why don't you come on over here, John? I have my hang low out.
I'm okay with him showing you what he wants to do with this hang low, John. This will be a fun experiment.
I am just glad we are still remote.
So that, kids, has been Stonehenge, a short little jaunt down the British rocky road there of Stonehenge. What do you guys think? What are your memories of it? What did you have the same like little ooh? What is the word you always go woo woo or what is it?
Woo woo.
Yeah, the woo woo look. Woo woo. The woo woo look at it like we did when we were younger. Where can they tell us about it, John?
On Facebook, in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation, you will find discussions about this. You will find discussions about
other large rocks.
other large rocks. And most importantly, memes. You'll find a lot of memes.
That you will.
Go to Facebook.com and search Hysteria Nation.
Also go to Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That is our Facebook page. Patreon.com/Hysteria51. You get radio dramas and Up All Night and Mad Blurry Hysteria's just released one where we're talking about not only are we talking the craziness of the stock market, Oklahoma wants to put in a Bigfoot hunting season. How about that?
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so we got that coming on there. Voicemail 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. We got a few to play this week. Holy shit, we're banging on all cylinders.
Fellas, just finished the Hum episode. Gotta say, there was not enough crash test dummies in there. I feel like producer Ray should have had some more dynamic drop-ins. But I was on a job site the other day after starting this episode, and I was hearing a hum. Turns out it was a faulty amplifier for a subwoofer, but Holy crap, guys. You had me.
Shit, they got me.
I don't know how.
Brent, still a dirty pigeon. GoFopedia for the win. C-Bot, you suck. And 3, 2.
Hey, you remember to count. There you go. Hell yeah.
Good job.
Oh, man, that would be weird when you hear it, and then all of a sudden you're like, what the fuck is going on?
They got me.
And you can never have too much crash test dummies, so I agree.
That's true. All right. Next voicemail, Brent.
All right.
Hey, guys. It's shout out from Canada. Woo. I love your guys' show. I've second time caller, actually. This is the Strange Brew Podcast. We're kind of like the same, but we're a little Canadian version. I was wondering, I just got on iHeartRadio, and I was wondering how I could get advertisement to even shout you guys out, because I noticed that you guys kind of shout out and do advertisement for other podcasts, and I would love to do that on my own for you guys. So I'm just wondering if I could do that, and tell C-Bot to take it easy on the Canadians, okay? He needs to take it easy on us Canadians. We're pretty crazy ourselves. We might fucking be coming after him if he doesn't come after us first, but I'm sure he'll be up here soon. Thanks for the shout-out, dudes. I appreciate it. I will keep listening. Tell your listeners that, you know, keep it going because you guys are great. Like, you know what I mean?
You fucking Canadian. No.
So, to answer his question, that's...
Yeah, you call and leave a voicemail. That's how you get a shout-out. There you go. That works.
All right, next voicemail.
That is a good show. Strange Brew is fun.
Yeah, hi. This is Gabe with Velasquez here, and I was wondering if your next show... You can make up about the king of the monsters, Godzilla. I would really appreciate that. Can you do that?
Good
for me?
Timing.
Hey, Ziva.
I think so. Was that his mom prompting?
Yeah, flavors.
That's awesome. You know, there's it's something I tell people all the time. If nothing else, Hysteria 51 is a family
affair.
There
you go. Yeah, so this was a perfectly timed one. People are losing their shit that, like, Godzilla and Kong are getting ready to fight. And people are, like, so anti-Kong. Where did that come from? And I don't know that they know this, but it's not the same Kong from, like, the movies that have nothing to do with this. He is the same size as Godzilla in these.
They're mad about the size, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, I have not done enough research, but... It's the same Kong from Skull Island.
So he was a little boy there. Now, if you watch the video, they're the same size.
You could go back to that movie and track whether you think it's right or not. But if you had a problem with it now, you should have had a problem with it.
Well, then he was small. He was adolescent. He was a child. And his parents, their skeletons dwarfed him.
So in the new one, he's through the fact that he's a child.
They talked about he was a child. They said he's just a little kid, you know, and so he's growing.
I was drunk on a plane when I watched that, so I
yeah. You know. And so in this one, and then in the previews, he's just as big as literally they're the same fucking.
Yeah, no, I've seen that, and he goes to punch him. Yeah, and, yeah.
It's a fun, and I want to show you something. I want to tell you something. So Godzilla is the king of the monsters. And he's fighting Kong. Kong's got to become King Kong somehow. I'm just saying.
Oh.
I'm just saying. Now, of course, okay. They're going to team up. Right. I don't want to give it away, but if you watch the trailer and the breakdowns, you know what's going on pretty
well. They're
going
to fight the other...
It's
going
to be Mechagodzilla. That's who they're fighting.
Is it?
Yeah, it's so they're...
Oh, I thought they were fighting the other Titans.
No, they're going to be fighting... Well, he's going to be fighting him because you're going to find out, I imagine, that the Orca is making him, you know, attack people and stuff like that, probably Godzilla.
Right.
There is the first one, Godzilla, in the first little scene, he's got like lights and shit all over him. So, you know, that's Mechagodzilla. And then there's like two scenes where there's an Asian gentleman like yelling and talking. He's in front of the diagnostics readout for Mechagodzilla on the wall and stuff like it's all.
Oh,
blinking.
Wow.
So at least it's going to be referenced in there. And I bet that's who they team up to beat or fight. And I love that Kong's got an axe with one of, he's made an axe out of a giant bone and one of Godzilla's back plates. Like, just rip that motherfucker off, and when he's breathing onto it, it like charges up.
I could have sworn I saw a preview where they were also fighting like one of the, I don't know if it was Mothra or another Titan.
Not in this. And that was the last one. Not, or, I mean, I haven't seen that. Together, they've only shown them fighting one. Well, they show Kong fighting a couple other ones, like on his island and shit like that. Like a couple monsters. Yeah. But yeah, who knows? Or maybe there might even be another.
Either way, it's exciting. Yeah. I agree with you. Like, calm down, everybody. Let's just go enjoy a good movie.
It's so funny. Like,
or this movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim was a terrible movie, and I loved every minute of it. You know?
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Turn your fucking brain off every once in a while.
Calm down. Right.
Except for I just found out Kong is a QAnon supporter, so son of a bitch. Now we can't even enjoy it.
I'm out. Takeaway is YouTube. All right. Hey, let's listen to one more voicemail.
Hey, Brent, John, and Seba. I'm Jessica from Sarasota. I've been binging on Hysteria 51 for some indeterminate amount of time now, and recently decided to sneak a call in with my problem. You see, I've given birth to 6 children, all of whom were time-traveling indigo alien embryos who were the result of Project MKUltra in 1969. Mm-hmm. Mm. Men in Black have shown up with the Grey 6 times to implant mm-hmm. these embryos in me, so now I'm raising 6 psychic time-traveling aliens who eat me out of house and home, and talk constantly to the ghosts about their past lives and tell me I'm going to end up in a backpack dead. That actually came from my 2-year-old about a week ago.
Oh, that's a problem.
The kids are going to know that I called, but maybe one of you can save me before they get mad. My address is 9.
Oh, well.
Here, when you got indigo psychic alien babies, you just do whatever they tell you and until they can overcome their human form and it's no longer confining to them. And then you ain't got anything to worry about.
She should actually feel blessed and a little humbled that the aliens left the embryos inside of her to full term.
Yeah, usually they come and scoop those out. And
they come scoop those out, right.
And it looks just like your uncle, as we've talked about on this show many, many, many times. It's the weirdest, damnedest thing. She's very lucky. Very, very, very lucky.
Oh, you just went down a path.
It went down a path that unfortunately MUFON shoved down my throat and my wife's throat, so I'm going to shove it down everyone's throat. Now I'm sounding like one of those uncles / aliens.
Okay, now I'm scared. Yay! Now I'm scared. I've got to go.
All right, kids. That's been our thoughts on indigo aliens building the Stonehenge. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been an indigo baby.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a 4th Hand Shine.